Welcome to the Yeshiva Shalmaila. This is David Lichtenstein. In honor of the Shloishim of the great Reb David Soloveitchik of Brisk, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, we decided we're going to speak about Reb David. And we got Reb Yitzchak Frankfurter, a lifetime Talmud for 40 years, was very close to him. He was often Reb David's Shliach in America, publisher of the Ami magazine, to speak about Torah, Hashkafis, stories of Reb David. Really a fascinating interview. And then we said, let's already talk about Brisk. Reb David, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, was the last grandson of Reb Chaim. And Reb Chaim, we know, brought a new derech to the world. And the question is, what is so new about Reb Chaim's derech that Reb Akiva Eger didn't have, the Tzoyis didn't have, the Nesivis, the Shach, the Taz, etc., etc., the Vilna Gaon? What was the new, by the way, and it was controversial at the time. If you look at the Hagdam of the Marcheshes, he writes, there's a new derech, he doesn't agree with it, etc., but there is something really new here. So we called many people who couldn't explain it. Like, it's amazing how many people we called, and they just didn't, they said, like, it's hard to explain. But we got three people who would. We got Hagoyin Reb Herschel Shechti, was a Talmuder of Yashuber Soloveitchik, a grandson of Reb Chaim, the greatest grandson we'll ever have in America of Reb Chaim, to speak about what did Reb Chaim bring to the world that was new. We have a grandson of Reb Chaim, Rosh Yeshiva of Liechtenstein. Then we have a Talmud of Reb David, Reb Ezra Rotkin, Rosh Yeshiva of Peira Torah. He was a Talmud he learned by Reb David for 15 years. It's not a typo, 15 years. And these last three guests will speak about what Brisk brought to the world. Rabbeisai, what are your thoughts? 732-806-8700, press number 2. That's for what the Bnei HaYeshiva have to say. Or info@headlinesbook.com. We will post both messages, voicemails, as well as written, unless you request otherwise. But we're interested in what the Olam has to say. A word from our sponsor. A few weeks ago, it's 4 weeks already, we started DAF Headlines, and you could get it either at dafheadlines.com, you could go to the OU and get it on all our DAF. If you go to dafheadlines.com, you could get it either by WhatsApp, or by email, or text, or there's a phone line, there's information how to dial in. And what is it? It's 5 minutes every day on the DAF, a halacha that would interest you. We speak about what Reb Shlomo Zalman said to the younger man who wanted to buy a very expensive esrig, but he didn't buy his wife yet, a dress for Yom Tov. The din of Simchas Yom Tov Bizman Hazeh, living on top of a shul. The Taz says his child died because of that. Should we be makbid Bizman Hazeh? Can a katan do malacha for you on Shabbos? Carry my siddur to shul? Or like the story of Reb Chaim, he started screaming, Man Yanuach Bincha, it's Issa Daraisa. Do we hold like that? What about Korban Pesach Bizman Hazeh? You have every year somebody takes a sheep and they run up to the mount. Well, can you or can't you? Do we not do it for political reason? Frumkeit, maybe you'll step in the wrong. What do we say? Tumah Hitra B'tzibur, and you should be able to do it. And then after the halacha of every day, we say something on the parsha, something chizuk. We say some divrei Elokim Chaim. I think you'll find it really enjoyable. In a short period, it's picked up quite a bit of listenership. If you've been listening for the last year and a half, you'll be happy to know that Headlines 3 is coming out with many of the topics that we discussed, debated, argued about, agreed and disagreed about, with comments from the Rabbanim who took part of it. After every piece, we print the Maror Mekayimus and what the Rabbanim said, their opinions on the topic. I think you'll find it interesting and really usable by the Shabbos table. You want to get everybody into it. You just don't want to talk about Trump anymore. You'll be able to talk Divrei Elokim Chaim with the Maror Mekayimus. You'll agree or disagree. It's coming out Purim time, maybe a week after Purim. We only printed 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 of them. They'll go quickly, so I urge you to go get one. I want to say a vart on Purim. Parsha Zachar. La Yehudim Haisa Oira V'Simcha V'Sasen V'Kar. And the Gemara Darshins Oira Zutoira Simchas Yamtif Sasen Mila Yikar Zutfilin. And everybody asks the same question. What do they have to have a limud for? What does it say? La Yehudim Haisa Toira Yamtif Mila and Tfilin. I want to share with you something beautiful. Purim is really when Yaakov and Esav separate. Amalek is the grandson of Esav. What's the last thing that happens when Yaakov and Esav separate? Esav says to Yaakov, take back the present. Here, let me give you the gift. And what does Yaakov say? Ki chonani Elokim v'yeshli koil. I have everything. I don't need it. Whatever I need, I have. And what does it say right after that? Vayeshev Esav b'yoymahu se'ira. He left. One way direction. V'yaakov nasa sukaisa. What's the message here? If we want to separate it from Esav, if we want to chepezich up from Esav, we have to be prepared to say, Yeshli Koil, I need nothing from you. I don't need Yale or Harvard. I don't need your politic. I don't need any your culture. Yeshli Koil, I have everything. Then you could separate yourself from Esav. Reb Moshe Feinstein, the great Poisei Goyin, used to say when people would say Shveretz is Zayin Ayid, Reb Moshe would get very upset. He would say, no, Segutz is Zayin Ayid. And he would talk about parents. Some had children that weren't so good. Other had children that were wonderful. He would say, one said, Shveretz is Zayin Ayid. The other one told his children, it's fantastic. And I have a riot to Reb Moshe from a Beferish article in the New York Times. The New York Times reports about a Gallup poll where they interviewed 372,000 people. They were looking for, the Gallup was looking, who are the happiest people in America? And they said, the Asians are happier than whites. Hawaii is the happiest state. Men are happier than women. Over 50, happier than under 50. Self-employed, happier than people working for somebody else. People who make over 120, happier than people make under 120. Jews are the happiest race, more than Christian, Hindus, etc. And you know who's the happiest of the Jews? There's Orthodox, Reform, and Conservative. Orthodox Jews are the happiest people. So the New York Times decided they wanted to find who is the happiest man in America. And they said one more thing. People with a sense of humor are happier than people without a sense of humor. So they went to Hawaii and inquired in Hawaii who's an Orthodox Asian man over 50, self-employed, make more than 120, and is kosher. And they found a man, Alvin Wang. So the reporter called him up and he said, you know, Mr. Wang, you're the happiest man in America? And this Mr. Wang supposedly answered, he said, this is a joke, right? He obviously had a sense of humor. But what does it say? The happiest person in America is an Orthodox Jew. So when you say Shveretz is Zayin Ayid, not only is it Be'ed Chinuch, it happens to be a lie too. And I decided, let me check why. So I pulled up, you know, Baruch Hashem, today we have the big Rebbe Google. And I go, what are the biggest problems facing American families today? Now, I want to point out, in our society, we have all of these. You tell me if these are the 10 biggest problems facing your family. One is coping with child abuse and family violence. That's number one. Two, illiteracy among our youth. Here's another one. Many of our nation's school children drop out before graduating. I don't know. Here's the next one. Teenage pregnancy and childbearing is a significant problem for youth, their families, their children. Here's the next one. Alcoholism, a disease found in one of three American families. Homeless families, the fastest growing segment of the homeless population. Illegal substance abuse increases the crime rate and destroys family. Single parenting is a principal contributor to the growing number of women and children living in poverty. Now, again, I say we have all of these, but, you know, you wouldn't. One out of six women experienced rape. I mean, I ask you, we have all these issues. Every issue that you have in the world, we have Bayidin. But are these the top issues facing families? And the answer is no. Very clearly, I live here, I know. So when it says the Orthodox Jews are the happiest people in America, I think there's truth to that. So I think when we say, La Yehudim Haysa Oira V'Simcha V'Sasin V'Kair, there's a message here. Sometimes people look at the Torah and they say, it's a burden. Like they look at Yom Tov, wow, you know, I can't run around, Shabbos, Yom Tov. And the answer is the Torah is telling us, no, these things, they don't look like it, but they will make you a very happy person. And let me share with you a story that happened to me personally. My father-in-law and mother-in-law were very erlicha people. My father-in-law was Rosh Yeshiva Beis Shraga for 50 years. My mother-in-law was Rebbetzin in the high school also for close to 50 years. And they lived in really very humbly. Like there were eight chairs around the dining room table from eight different sets. So I remember when I was newly married, I came to visit them. I think it was a Pesach or a Sukkot. I don't remember. And they had a number of parents in the school, one of whom was perhaps the wealthiest man in the Jewish world. And he had kids in my Shver's yeshiva. And he flew in by a private jet to visit one of his children. And he flew back. And I remarked to my mother-in-law, I said, you know, does it bother you at all that, you know, you struggle, you know, you live so humbly and somebody flies in on a private jet, the cost of the private jet back and forth, it's like 6 months of your living expenses. Does that bother you at all? And my mother-in-law looked at me with like a totally like astonished look. She said, I would never change places with that person. Never. In other words, the sense of yeshli koil and the satisfaction. In other words, making money is a wonderful thing. You can do tzedakah, you can give mitzvahs, but to her, giving up, like the Sasain v'simcha v'ikar oira zutaira. It was like im yitain ish es kol hoin beisai boiz yavuzulai. To her was a look of astonishment, this feeling of yeshli kail. And you know, I say this at a time where, you know, we spoke about, I believe it's in Yeridaya Kuf Nun Vav. The Shulchan Aruch says one of the issers, the isurim of lois sechaneim, is to look at a guy and say, to be meshabeach his maisim. Oh, he's such a wonderful. And where does that come from? When we do that, we're not yeshli koil, and we can't shep as a chab for an Esav. So if we want to be Mekayim, if we want to understand and live and understand that oira zu taira, simcha zu yamtif, yukar zu tefillin, we have to appreciate how special and lucky and fortunate we are. And if sometimes we doubt it, look in the New York Times, because you know our enemies never say something about it. They would never admire us in this way if it wasn't true. Here's my riddle of the week. I had by me a Rav from Eretz Yisrael, and we entered into a discussion. So he said Yeshiva Bachrim don't have to go to war in Eretz Yisrael, even if it's a Melchemes Mitzvah. And how did Yishtal Ravek? The Gemara in Saita says, by Melchemes Mitzvah, afilu kalam echupasa. But the Shaila is, what about Shevet Levi? The Rambam says, Shevet Levi lo erech in Melchama. So there's Machloikis. The Keren Oira says, they're not erech Melchama, dafke Melchemes Rishus, but a Melchemes Mitzvah they are. But other Achrayim, the Tzitz Eliezer, there's Naim El Mishpat, etc. A pekel of Achrayim say that Shevet Levi is even Pata from a Melchemes Mitzvah. He says Yeshiva Bachram all have a din of Shevet Levi, and that's why they're Pata from the Melchemes Mitzvah. If in Eretz Yisrael it has din of Melchemes Mitzvah, because their lives are threatened. That's what we told me the halacha. So I asked him, the halacha is somebody who's not mechuyiv in something can't be moitzi acherim. The Chinuch says Nashim are Pata from Achias Amalek because they're not Oirechei Melchama. And the Minchas Chinuch says, no, they are mechuyiv in a Melchemes Mitzvah. So I asked, if you say Yeshiva Bachram a pata from Melchemes Mitzvah, l'chayre de pata, like the Chinuch says, from the din of Machias HaMalek too. So Bazai, how do you have Rabbanim and Rosh Yeshivas go up? For Zechayre Sasha'asa l'cha HaMalek, l'chayre, according to these Achrayim, de pata from Machias HaMalek, even it's a Melchemes Mitzvah, but Shevet Levi is going to be pata. So how could they be moitzi the Olam with the Aliyah? That is the riddle of the week. For all of you who like halacha, here's one of the most exciting halachic learning programs. I think it's the exciting new halachic program in the world. Here's Reb Eliadah Goldwicht.
Joining us from Yerushalayim is Reb Eliadah Goldwicht. He started a program called Smichas Chaver, which is in 4 continents and 25 cities. Welcome, Reb Eliadah.
Thank you so much.
So, you know, we're doing a program about Brisk, and we're going to speak about one of the things is, what did Reb Chaim bring to the world? He changed the world. I want to know, what is new about Smichas Chaver that's causing it to spread so rapidly?
So, Baruch Hashem, Smichas Chaver has took off in the past 3 years. We started 3 years ago in 2 locations, and now we are in over 75 locations. And since the Chabura, this headline show this week is really about Brisk, so Reb Chanan Wasserman, the Talmud of Reb Chaim, in his Bagdama, to Kevitz Shirim, he said that he heard from his Rebbe, Reb Chaim, that our job is not to be mechadish chidushim. He said, our job, when it comes to the Rishonim, like in the whole Kippur, he said, our job is just to try to understand what the Rishonim said. So what Smichas Chaver is trying to do is not necessarily with the Rishonim, but more much practical, just to understand halakha l'maisa. That is our goal. It's geared for Balabakim who are working, where they can have a seder limud that is super practical, super relevant, that the learning should be geshmak, and that they can bring the learning also to their home. So the Chabura meets once a week. It's, like we said, in over 75 locations. And we have 3 main goals. Goal number one is that the learning should be geshmak. It should be Shevas Achim Gad Yachad. It should be a great Chabura of guys. It should be a lot of fun. Goal number two is that whatever people learn, they should be able to bring it home to their family. We have material that the participants bring to their Shabbos table, comics for little kids, questions and answers that makes the learning super geshmak. And then goal number three is that we want people to know Allah. It shouldn't just be, you know, I went to another shir, it was nice, it was good, you know, and I remember something for 10 minutes. It's really, the goal is to get people to remember what they learned. And the way we're able to do that is at the end of every Zman, which is a 6-month period, we have a Bechina, where the goal of the Bechina, like you said, is to remember what you learned, to really push you to motivate to remember what the learning. And those who pass the Bechina, they get a certificate that's signed by Rav Amar, the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael, and Rav Shechter. And it was also, up until recently, signed by Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg, Zichar Tzadik Livracha. And what's also very unique about Smichas Chaver is that it has the spectrum of Klal Yisrael. We have Hasidim learning. We have modern Orthodox chaburas. We have chaburas in Bnei Brak. We have chaburas really all over the place. We just recently piloted a chaburas specifically geared for Chabad, where the learning
right,
is...
Right, right. But Chabad doesn't really use the Mishnah Brura. They have their own limits. What do you do with them?
So with them, what we do is we have the... You know, we start... Every sugya, every chabura, we start from the Psukim to the Mishnah, to the Gemara, to the Rishonim, to the Shulchan Aruch, to the modern-day Poskim. So you can see the Shalshalot of the Masorah. And the modern-day Poskim. And then when it comes to Chabad, so with the help of Rav Avram Jacks and Rav Gitalo Bassman, who have been helping me with this, and with the rabbeim that are in Chabad, they made it more halacha l'maisa for the Chabad tzibur. And we have similar things also in Gnei.
So do you, I'm sorry, I'm curious, do you use the Rav Shulchan Aruch instead of the Mishnah Berurah?
So in those Chaburas, they will use the Rav Shulchan Aruch instead of the Mishnah Berurah, correct. But we have other locations as well that, you know, in Gnei Bach, it's more about what the Chazon Ish said. In Yerushalayim, it's more about Roshon Zalman. In Rehovot, where it's a Svardi Chabura, it's more Rav Avadia. So 99% of the Torah is all the same, right? For all sects of Kai. So it's just a few details that all the way at the end, there's a difference. So in each Chabura, we're able to fine-tune it to that Kibur and to that location.
Give us an example of like some of the topics that you'll cover in your Chabura.
So now the main limit is Mukta. So we tried to cover any common Shaila that will arise in your house over Shabbos. For example, a person forgets his alarm on his iPhone on Shabbos, and it starts ringing. So are you allowed to move it? So is an iPhone a kli shem lachol ister? Is it a kli? Is it mukta machlus chetzim kitz? Exactly, what type of mukta is it? So we've learned basa b'chol. You have guys who learned in yeshiva their whole life, and then their wife accidentally mixes the coffee, or they mix the coffee, with a fleshic spoon, and they don't know what to do. Is it mutter? Is it usher? All the common shilas that happen all the time. You cut an onion with a milchig knife, and then you put it in a fleshic pot, and then all the things that are very labedic, but happen all the time, we cover those figures. Now, what we're working on is more Hilchos Shabbos. Next, in this upcoming Zman, which begins right after Pesach, we're going to be learning all the practical melachos that arise on Shabbos, a lot of them, including opening cans of Coke and bottles and binyan and stira b'kelim. We're also going to be talking about borer and hopefully other stickers about melabin, cleaning your shirt, your suit gets a little dusty or you got to dust it off. All these, you know, sugars we're going to hopefully cover in the summer. It's actually fascinating how it grows. It grows more from the bottom up. A lot of times we get calls from people in different cities all around the world where basically they say, we heard this is amazing. I heard from my cousin, from my brother, from my friend, from whatever, that everyone is growing and learning and they're bringing material to their Shabbos people and they're getting the real sipuk for the first time in their life from Limuna Torah. How do I bring it to my community? So those are the...
Give me some of the countries that you're in besides the United States and Eretz Yisrael.
So we're in Canada, we're in Chile, we're in South Africa, in Australia, in Germany, in Gibraltar, Manchester, United Kingdom. It's spreading.
And if somebody wants to join, what do they do? Or if a community wants to join, what do they do?
So if a community wants to join, the easiest way to do it, you can go onto the website, smichascover.com, and hit the contact us and send us a request. Or you can email me directly at michatchaver@gmail.com. michatchaver@gmail.com.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Goldberg.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Goldberg. Bye-bye.
As always, if you'd like to send in a comment, 732-806-8700. And for comments, it's 2. Or you can email us info@headlinesbook.com. We do put up the comments and the letters online where readers or listeners can access them unless you request otherwise. Let's go to our guests.
Joining us from New York City is Rabbi Yitzchak Frankfurter. He's the publisher of Ami magazine. He was a Talmud of Reb David in 1977, 1978, but maintained the relationship with him for the last 40-some-odd years. Welcome, Reb Yitzchak.
Thank you very much. It's an honor and pleasure to be with you on.
So tell us, when you think of Reb David, I'm sure he was an Adam Mashalim in many ways, but if you had to pick one or two outstanding characteristics that you say, this Shtolzavek what he was, what would they be?
It's a very difficult question to answer, and the reason is because how do you sum up a person that I got to cherish with all my heart and to respect with all my heart and to feel an awe in his presence and love in his presence? I felt a tremendous his warmth, and I had at the same time awe for the person. I was always inspired by him. I don't think there was another person like him that I knew in my life. I didn't know anybody who encompassed his piety, his tzidkus, his dedication to learn Hagisa Bayema Balayla with such an extent, and the Ramah, and the, I'm talking about the level of his learning. I was speaking to Baruch Mordechai Ezdafi, who I was able to figure out about 2 or 3 years ago. He was probably the first Talmud of Rebbe Soloveitchik, Baruch Mordechai Ezdafi. There was about an 8-year difference between the two. And I found that to be a fascinating find on my part. Almost like an historian, I searched and I found his first Talmud. And when I told him, I think he told me his relationship with the Rebbe going back when they were both bachurim, when they were both still not married. The Rebbe was older. The Rebbe got married a little bit later in his life. And the Rebbe was makariv. The Rebbe actually told me that he saved the Baruch Mordechai Ezdafi's life. And I spoke to the Baruch Mordechai Ezdafi about him after his passing, you know, the warmth and the fire that he spoke about. He was his first Talmud, I think, and I figured that out. And I also spoke to David, and he confirmed that the Baruch Mordechai Ezdafi was probably his first Talmud, starting back when he was still a Bacher. But you have to understand, this was a life dedicated to, from when he was a Bacher, from his youth, and much younger. He grew up in a home that was Tiger. I mean, his father was, you know, lived in Beit Tiger, the Biskarov, who grew up by the Chaim Brisker. He grew up in a total different milieu, a different type of environment than anybody that I, you know, that I can associate with. He, when I walked into him, I felt I was going back to the Messiah. That goes back to the Gra, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. It was a connection of Dairus, it was a connection of generations that he had, and he lived. And it was a life that wasn't just the connection because he happened to have been the Briskarov's son. He lived his whole life double connected, attached to the teachings of his great father, of his father that inspired and changed probably our generation completely, and the way we look at the way we look at the Rambam, the way we look at Chazal. And he grew up with this, and he internalized this. He internalized that Masoret in him. And he gave this over to his Talmidim with such a fire on a daily basis. He sure were literally fire. He was on fire. And he had his own divritzer. It wasn't only things that he heard from his father. He was a Mahadish. He was somebody that was K'mayan Hamazgaber. He constantly looked into the Rambam. He had divritzer, you know, flowing from him. And going back to Baruch Mordechai Ezdafi, the way he described him very well, he said he was like he called him an Oitzer Hamnitzer, like a treasury, that a locked treasury. He told me that he stored, this is the way he described him, he stored the Torah's, the thinking, the Torah stories from Reb Chaim Brisker. The way it was given to him, that's the way he stored it away. He stored all the divritzer from the Briskarov. Stored was all stored in his mind. With every detail, it was stored. And then he stored his own divritzer. He had thousands upon thousands upon thousands of divritzer stored in his mind. And he gave this over to his Talmidim. He never was mishali. He never, every detail was important to him. And the way he heard it is the way he gave it over. But he wasn't just somebody who heard Tiras and heard Kedushim and heard insights from Reb Chaim Brisker, from his father in the name of Reb Chaim Brisker, or who heard things from the Biskarov from his father. But he was somebody who analyzed it. He was Mizakeach. He took issue, took his own position, challenged what they were saying. And if he didn't understand what they were saying, he told the Talmidim that I have a question here. And I asked my father, and my father said it's a good question. It was something that was, you were part of a gigantic heritage. And if you ask me, this is one aspect of him. This is just one aspect. He also, the aspect of what I'm just described was the aspect of his limud haTorah, and just one little aspect of that aspect of limud haTorah. But then he was what they call a pious Jew, a tzaddik. He was literally a tzaddik. He feared sin like I had never seen anybody else fear sin. He feared the Yom HaDin. He feared the Day of Judgment. He feared the judgment he will have to give for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is something which he probably inherited from his great-grandfather, the Beis HaLevi. And they say that the Beis HaLevi, the joke went around that the Beis HaLevi will not get any char in Olam Haba because he had too much fear of sin. He couldn't sin. So when he didn't sin, it's simply he had too much fear to sin. This was Reb David. He literally feared sin. All his remach evorim from the morning to at night. It was, and this is a long life. He passed away when he was probably 99 or perhaps even 100. And every single day was a day of Torah, was a day of avodah. His tefillah, talking about avodah, we'll define it the way the Rambam says avodah Hashem is tefillah. His tefillah was just in and of itself was something that you can write books about. The way he learned Krishna, of course, which was the Briscoe way, which was repetitive, but they repeated words because they were makhid to say, you know, certain words and certain syllables in its proper fashion, and so they would at least repeat a lot of their words. But it was also Shimon Esher, the way he babbled Shimon Esher, he would cry. His Yiddish mind, there's just so much to speak about. And this is just, let's say, Beinoy Lebein Hamokin. These are things that between him and God. But then, there were things that was, which he had, which I felt, and the warmth to his Talmidim, the ahava, the love that he showed to his Talmidim. I was privileged to have the relationship with him where I saw his little warm side. He gave you Shalom Aleichem. He welcomed you into his home, and with a tremendous warmth, and he kept a relationship with hundreds of Talmidim that went past through the yeshiva over the years. He was very unique. And I have to tell you and tell your listeners that and this is something which maybe you want to explore a little bit, but with me maybe or with somebody else, but you should. If Reb David represented a certain hashkafa, a certain perspective that's not accepted today, meaning it's not popular today. The popular view, the way Chavedim look at certain things, was not the way Reb David looked at certain things. Had he represented what the common view is, he would have been considered the Rabbi Shel Kol Yisrael. He would be considered the leader of Kol Yisrael. But he did not. He represented a very parochial view, which is not the perspective of the Haredi world, and certainly not the perspective of anybody else outside the Haredi world. He represented a view of being totally disassociated and cut off, and this is what he wanted. And he had a lot of tarumas. He had a lot of complaints about this generation that we reached out to people who are not Shemesh Shabbos, who are not Shemesh Tarumas. He viewed it as a violation of our
when you say reached out, what do you mean reached out? Like, give me an example.
Let me give you an example. When the problem of, I was very close with him with respect to the issue of Giyus B'nai HaYeshivas, conscription of, you know, into the military, that Israel was then threatening a couple of years ago to be Megayus, which is still an issue that's still there, and something which hasn't been resolved yet, but we all know about it, to draft the yeshiva boys. And you know, this issue was something which at about 4 or 5 years ago became really a hot issue, and it concerned them tremendously. So I told them then, I said, you know, Rosh Hashiva, you have always you're always concerned that Medinas Israel, that the Israeli government is going to mix into the way we mechanech our kids, to the way the yeshivas. That's why Brisk Rav and him, I mean, the mistake that they had was not to accept any money from government sources, to not that all the yeshivas, and they differed from most of the yeshivas, which did take funding from the government. And in Bnei Barak, and he always used to say that in Bnei Barak, they don't understand the issue of not taking money from the government. So when I went to him about this, so I told him the yeshiva always was concerned that the government was going to try to influence our chinuch, our education, and they've done it. They're trying to do it, even though, you know, it has nothing to do with the money. You know, even though we haven't taken the money, or at least a lot of yeshivas haven't, but they're making this, you know, this general, gezeira, according to him, they're trying to draft these boys into the army, so that's going to truly change the yeshivas. And, you know, so I was like speaking to him about that. He says, but I don't understand the Tashtefesh. He says, it's not the money. He says, we have done a major mistake, something which he has been speaking about all the years, which was that we should have cut off, had we lived in ghettos, have we been cut off from the general population and lived in ghettos, they would never look at us. But what happened was we decided that we're going to be part of not only the government, which is, I'm not talking about only being in the Knesset, but being part of the general society. We decided that, meaning we Haredim, decided that we're going to be one of them, we're going to influence them, we're going to be part of them. So now they're trying to influence us and change us.
Okay, so let me ask you another question. What was it, did he ever talk about his relationship with his father, growing up, child of his father? So give us a story, like what he would say.
Well, first of all, they were together during the war. They fled together. I'll never forget once he told me how he was with his father by Chaim Leiser in the house in Vilna, and he was explaining to me what the Chaim Leiser looked like. He was describing his tzura. He was describing the brightness that came out from his face and came forth from him. So he always discussed the father. He had tremendous awe of his father. He suffered Klal Yisrael. He suffered everything that he was fully aware of what was going on in every aspect. He was reading the newspapers, and he was fully aware of what was going on in general news. And he commented constantly during his Chumash Yerim. He commented on world news, on Israeli news. He would comment constantly. He was somebody who was watching through his dollar balance and not knowing what's going on in the outside world. He was fully aware.
Rabbi, so if you had to say, you know, the Briskerov had three sons in Eretz Yisrael who had yeshivas. He had Reb Errol, Reb David, and he had Reb Meir. You were a Bacha, you went to Eretz Yisrael. Like, what was the difference between deciding to go to Reb Errol, Reb David, or Reb Meir?
I was initially going to go to Reb Errol. I wrote about this last week when I wrote about Reb David. But there was a line going into, you have to wait in line to get into a shir. There's a tour to go into a shir. And I didn't, and so meaning that you couldn't go into a shir right away. You had to wait in line. You have to wait a certain, a few months, or maybe even a year to get into a shir, which I didn't have the luxury of time because I wanted to get back to America. So I went to Reb David. When I went to Reb David, his yeshiva was in top-notch form. He had great talmidim. He had all the children of the yeshivas sent their children to him, their sons to him. So I was learning together with many, many sons of Rishi Yeshiva at the time. And also the Schlesingers were there, Rabbi Yochanan Schlesinger's children. We had very, very, he had a very high caliber yeshiva at the time when I was there. A lot of the best bachurim. Reb Meir didn't have a serious yeshiva at that time, but Reb Errol did. Reb Errol and Reb David was right next to him. And again, it was a decision that I made based upon the fact that
Was there a difference? Do you know, like, if you had the script, is there any difference between the Hashgafis? Like, were they sort of very similar? Like, was there a different flavor? Like you say, Reb David was about Yiras HaChet. Reb David was about Hasmada. Reb David was about his father. Reb David was about the Havas Yisrael. Is there a difference between the two besides waiting in line for Shir?
I would say there was less. He was less intense. I think Reb David, it's hard for me to analyze my Rebbe and other Gedolei Yisrael. But if I would have to analyze them, I would say that Reb David would represented more the Beis HaLevi, which was a very intense. The Beis HaLevi is always described as somebody who is very intense. Reb Chaim was much more of a, Reb Chaim, his son, was much more of a relaxed. They say that he used to play with the Bachrim when he was Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. He wasn't Matul Ema on his Bachram, on his Talmidim. On the contrary, he had a very friendly relationship with his Talmidim in Volozhin, Reb Chaim. So if I would have to just contrast maybe Reb Beryl and Reb Beryl, although Reb Beryl also would have his Matul Ema, but certainly Reb Beryl represented more the Beis HaLevi, I would say, this intensity, this Yiras HaChet, this constant fear, a tremendous fear, fearing him, fearing what the Medina Yisrael is going to be doing, fearing the future of Paul Yisrael. The tremendous fear. I repeated this story. The brother asked me to come down to me to Yisrael to publicize his fears. We'll use that word, his fears about, you know, the drafting. So I told him that I would, you know, except that, you know, if he'd make me as a shliach, if I would, you know, be his emissary. And he said, yes, you know, if I would remember, yeah, he told me then, if I remember the fire that he used to do it with, the Ben, that he used to speak about these type of issues, then I can be a shliach. So, you know, I accepted being a shliach. I went then afterwards, so he told me he had this, like, tremendous intensity, tremendous fear, you have to make sure that they protest in the United States. He felt that the Yeshua is going to come, what's going to change the Israeli government's mind is going to be if the American Jews protest, because they have this hashkafa from the Brisk Rav that the Americans can influence the Israelis, you know, the Israeli government with human rights and stuff like that, religious rights. So I accepted, but he was he told me that he's literally sick. He shared with me that he was physically ill, that he couldn't eat. It was Yom Tov, it was right before Yom Tov, and then after Yom Tov I spoke with him. He told me he was physically ill, he couldn't eat Yom Tov. He was, I spoke also to Mayor Parrish afterwards. He also confirmed that. Bubba told me he's physically ill. Anyway, I went to Reb Chaim Kanievsky after that, and I shared with Reb Chaim that I'm a shliach of Reb David about the use. I dared to tell that to him, and I asked him what, I said that my Rosh Hashiva is exceptionally agitated about this issue, and what Reb Chaim says, what can be done about this issue of use. So he, like, calmly and serenely, you know, looks at me and points up and says, Medav Davin, you have to pray. And I said, but my Rosh Hashiva says you have to protest, we have to do things. And again, he says, you know, he points up again and says, Medav Davin, you have to pray. So I saw two different personalities, totally different personality. I repeated this actually afterwards to Reb David, that I was about Khan Kanievsky. He asked me, what's the gazette? What did he say? He said, without davening. But like a certain, like, calmness, a certain serenity, and the intensity that I'm trying to say that it was exceptionally, the Brisker intensity, the Brisker had this also, but very, very intense. It was very intense. It was nothing, but also I would be missing a major point is the emes. There's such a rank type. There's no, you know, it's either kosher or trade. There's no such thing like tariff, you know, like nish kosher, nish trade. There's no, it's either, there's a lot of black and white and very little gray and gris. You know, there's a lot of black and white. It's either the Krishna is good or the Krishna is not good. Either the Esther is kosher or it's not kosher. It's not kosher, but the Ezra and kosher, it's not something which, you know, it's not the type of vocabulary they have, Bechlal. Their vocabulary was something which was, and that's part of their intensity and part of their, you know, seeking the truth. Halachas, their hashkafas. It's either the Rambam, said this or he said that. You know, there's no like, you know, you can make mit nose and say, okay, you know, the Rambam really meant this, but he said this, and you know, it was a tremendous seeking the truth, and seeking the objective truth to the best of that, you know, they were able to think that, that it's humanly possible to reach that truth. But that truth has to be pure. That truth has to be reign. It has to be totally, totally without contradictions. If it's contradiction, that's something which was emphasized, you know, that it was natural by them. They looked at the world like that, you know, and Lomdus for them wasn't just something natural. When you look at the Rambam, you know, Mezot Kazavot. They lived their lives through Lomdusha concepts. They looked at the world through certain Brista eyes and saw things in a very, very with a certain clarity. And things that people say, you know, it's Suzefshe Azoy, but maybe it's Suzefshe, maybe it's Suzefshe. It's either, you know, like, but then, you know, again, it's truth. You want to define my Rosh Hashiva, you asked me when we started this conversation, how I would say is major characteristic. I would probably say the Bakashif and the search for the truth, and not to, and there's no compromise. I'll tell you one thing that he used to always say. This is something which is also important. This is not so much of a story, but something of an attitude. As much as he, and they spoke very, very strongly against Zionism, very strongly against Mizrahi, very strongly. But yet, and people think that there's a spirit, and Brisk has no spirit, that, you know, he was, they were Makariv, and I spoke to Reb David more than once about Reb Yoshe Ber, their cousin over here in Boston, Reb Yoshe Ber, Soloveitchik, Rabbi Soloveitchik. And people think, okay, you know, he was a cousin, so they looked away at his Mizrahi, his violence, attitude. But it's not not understanding who they were. Because if they looked away, that means that they violated something. So they looked away, that means they weren't being truthful. And not being truthful by them is the biggest fate, is the biggest sin, is the biggest failing. If they didn't look away, and this is something which people should appreciate, and David actually said it, they never, ever, in as much as they were Tanoim, they never spoke personally against any Talmud Chacham, any derogatory terms, meaning the David, I can't speak for everybody, never spoke derogatory, and he said this to Hashem, his father. If he was a Talmud Chacham, he disagreed with, you know, with his Hashtatus, and he could speak about the Mizrahi in such ways that, if I would repeat them, I think that most of your listeners would feel offended. They were first cousins, Brisker Rav's nephew, his father's brother. So they were kind towards him. But this is, again, I don't want to repeat myself, but this is, again, is not understanding who Brisker is. Brisker is not kind to cousins. They never spoke against anybody personally. Never. Never heard him in derogatory terms, although he would say many times, in B'nai Barak for statesmeners, though. You know, in B'nai Barak, they don't understand it. Yeah, he would express it, especially when it came, you know, comes to like, taking money from the yeshivas, which was then, at that time, something which, when I was learning the yeshiva, that was like one of the hot topics, taking money from the Israel. And that's something which, you know, they of course, disallowed. But again, he would never speak. He would have the best relationship with Avshtangum. Never, even the Avshtangum, they totally disagreed on many of his Ashkafas.
He refrained from ad hominem attacks, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Wonderful conversation.
I appreciate it. Okay, thank you.
Before we go to our guests who are going to explain what Reb Chaim brought new to the world, I want to take 3 or 4 minutes to tell you how I see what Reb Chaim made a difference in my ignorant and humble opinion. But there's a maisa that happened. Reb Chaim was by some type of an event, and a Rav sat down next to him, a dinner, a bar mitzvah, chasana, and he started to tell Reb Yankiv, Reb Chaim, what's with the yeshiva bachram? Like kvetching so much? You have to learn Gemara, Rishonim, Shulchan Aruch, and Megeid Vaita, like all this kiris. And as Reb Chaim said, you know, besides knowing the Shulchan Aruch, you have to understand learning. You have to understand the Havana. The Rav, no. Bekiyas in Shulchan Aruch is the Ikazach. They're sitting there, and somebody comes running in with a frantic look on her face. She's looking for the Rabbanim. She comes up to the Mehed table, and she says, oi, something very terrible happened. What happened? They were cooking a big pot of meat. They had a Goya in the house. The Goya saw, and remember, then ovens weren't so common. So the Goya put her piece of meat into the pot also. She thought, like, this way her piece of tray for meat gets cooked too. The hostess came to take out the dish. She sees the Goya go over to the pot, take out a piece of meat, and put it in a plate.
So she says to her, I didn't give you permission. So she says, well, what's not your meat? I put in my own meat. So she said, you put in your own meat? That's tray for me. She started screaming. The guy got scared. She picked up her plate and she ran home. She ran away. So now the woman comes in. She says, usually they would know what to do. Her husband said, batal b'shishim. They don't know what to do. They ran away with the meat. How do they know how big the tray for piece of meat was? How large? So Reb Chaim turns around to this Rav. He says, no, yilantach shulchan aruch. Why don't you paskin? So this fellow said, oh, it's good that you asked me. It's a very simple answer. It's mefurish in the Shulchan Aruch and Sadi Ches that if min b'mina, and here it's min b'mina, get mixed up, and you can't figure out how big the treifa part is, what do you say? You say like this, midaraisa min b'mina is batal b'roiv. So midaraisa, it's for sure kasha. Elama, you don't know if it's shishim, that's a safik drabanan, and safik drabanan is lakula. So he turned around to the woman and he said, you could eat the meat, you could eat the rest of the pot. So Reb Chaim said, you see, this is why I said maybe you have to learn more be'ian. He said, you have to understand why. He says, because let's think. If this woman put in a piece of tray for meat, it certainly wasn't maluach, it wasn't salted. So that means that there's dam in the meat. So he said, even though the meat is min b'minai, but the dam is min shaloi b'minai. And min shaloi b'minai, midaraisa is not batal b'roiv. And you have to need shishim. Since you don't have shishim here, it should be asa because of the dam. So the Rav said to Reb Chaim, oi, you're right. And he turned around to the woman and he said, sa asa, you can't eat it. Reb Chaim said, wait one more minute. He said, but I'm not so sure, Reb Chaim said. Why? Because the Gemara in Menachos Daf Chaf Aleph says that Ze'iri says, Dam She Bishlai, Eina Yover Alav. Rashi says, why? The Torah is only Mechayiv Al Dam Haroy LeKapara. And since it's Bishlai, it's not Roy LeKapara. So since this is Dam She Bishlai, and it's only Midrabanan, you don't know how big it is. So again, you say, Safik Drabanan LeKula. So the Rav turned around to the woman. He says, oh, Anshuldikt, it's Mutta, you can eat it. So Reb Chaim said, wait. This is why he said again, you have to understand learning good. He says, why did he say? He says, because Tosfos says in Shabbos that dam, besides having the din dam, it dam chashiv kibasar. It has another iser besides being dam that is nechshav kibasar besides the iser dam. So he says this, that mevushal becomes a drabana and is only on the din dam because the din dam is, you need dam haroy lekapara. But on the din that it's has a din basar, dam has a din basar, and that is no din that is shayach lakrava. So for that din, now that it's basar, and it's basar of min, the dam, the din dam, basar and dam is min shaloi b'min, right? It's asami daraisa. You don't go basar roiv. So this guy turns around to the lady. He says, Anshuldikt, it's asa. So Reb Chaim said, wait a minute. He says, this Tosfos in Shabbos has two terutzim. He says, according to the first teretz, it's dam nechshav kibasar. But he says, according to the second teretz, Tosfos gives a second teretz, and according to the second teretz, you don't have the din of dam nechshav kibasar. And Tosfos in Psachim Ho says, and in Sanhedrin, that we go basar the second teretz in the Tosfos. So since it's dam nechshav kibasar, it's going to be mutter. So the guy turns around to the lady, this Rav, and he says, Anshuldikt samutta. So Reb Chaim said, wait, that's so simple. He says, this, that dam, that it's going to be mutter, he says, that else the din dam shabai. And even according to the second teretz, that it's going to be mutter, Reb Chaim said, there's a second problem, that what? There's a din of kol ayotzim and atame tame. By the way, it's much like that in the Rishonim and the Paiskim. So he says, besides the din dam shabai, there's this of kala yaitza. Once there's a din of kala yaitza on the dam is not, and that din dam is shaloi b'minai, so it should be asa. Bekitza, the guy turns around and he said, so asa. So Reb Chaim said, wait, but Bekitza, they went back and forth like 9 times. And it finished, Reb Chaim turned around to the rabbi, he says, if I state favos medav lernin mitlomdis be'ian. So what did what do you see from this story? I think that Reb Chaim drilled down further and further into the din to find all the different like particles, makeup of every halacha in a way that was never really done before, to just keep on breaking it into more and more and more pratim. I think that was really, they say two dinim in Reb Chaim. In this case, you have 5 dinim in the thing. I think that's really what was Reb Chaim brought to the world. All the chakiris, once we pass, is just the surface of the halacha. My humble, ignorant opinion. Let's go to our guests.
Joining us is Hagoyin Harav, Reb Herschel Shechta, who was for decades a Talmud of the Boston Harav, the Rashiva, Reb Yitzchak Elchanan, Reb Yashaber, and welcome to the Rosh Yeshiva. I'd like to ask Rosh Yeshiva, it says Reb Chaim was Mechadish, a Derech Chadash in learning.
What was new about Reb Chaim that you didn't have by Reb Kivega, by the Pnei Yeshua, by the Ksais HaChoshen? What was new about Reb Chaim?
I think it needs a lot of discussion. I'll present a little bit now, but we'll have to elaborate on it sometime in the future. My impression is that in every generation, people think in different ways. In different generations, the minds work differently. Take, for example, the Vilna Gaon came up with a chiddush. Vilna Gaon's brother, Rabbi Avraham, wrote a sefer Ma'alos HaTorah. So he quotes that his brother, the Vilna Gaon, came up with a new idea that Taryag Mitzvah doesn't mean 613 do's and don'ts. It's this sort of the atomic theory of mitzvahs, that there are certain inyonim involved in mitzvahs. You may have one mitzvah that has 10 inyonim, another mitzvah has 13 inyonim. There will be a little overlap. One of the 10 inyonim will share in, it'll share in common with one of the other 13 of the other mitzvahs. So he's the Vilna Gaon thought that there are 613 basic inyonim in mitzvahs. And but he, when he was younger, so he said he does know what they are. And then they say, I think the children of the Gros say that Biziknusa, when he was an old man, he made a list and he came up with 613 inyan. So this chiddush that the Gros came up with was about the same time that Dalton came up with the atomic theory of matter, that you have, there are atoms, different atoms, hydrogen, oxygen, and whatever, all of the 110, 20 atoms, whatever they are. And all the matter is composed of a combination of different atoms. Degree. So I think that was the Ruach HaZman. At that time, people were thinking to break down everything into component parts. So the Vilna Gaon thought like in Torah, and Dalton thought like this in chemistry and in physics like that. In every generation, people think differently. It's like the Chazal said in the Pasuk, Maimon Hasina was Kol Gadol V'lo Yosof. The Dvar Hashem continues throughout all the generations. As if the Rebbe Shlomo is talking to us in our generation, then we understand it differently. Each person understands the Torah according to the way the mind works in that generation. Like when we learn Gemara, so we now the Masha is out of style. A lot of people don't even look in the Masha. Once in a while you look in the Masha. Many times you don't look. The Rashash, we always look in the Rashash. So he always, the things that bother me, in Rashi he'll always. He always correct the same word that bothered me, or an idea that bothered me. The Rashash will always bring it up. The others in the back of the Gemara will not. See, he lived in a different generation. Think what happened in Reb Chaim's generation. Science was developing. There was more precision in science. So he felt you have to have more precision, not a conscious decision. The mind worked in such a way that when you learn Gemara, you also have to discuss with more precision. I think they quoted the Yesra Baruch Be'er. Baruch Be'er used to chat the spiders from Reb Chaim Shem, said he asked them, what's so great about Reb Chaim? Isn't everything in Rabbi Kivega? So he said, Rabbi Kivega tells you what you should say. Reb Chaim tells you what you should say, what you shouldn't say. You shouldn't say like that. It means with more precision. It has to be with more precision. And Achanami, a lot of the wonderful ideas that Reb Chaim says, say in the Pnei Yeshua. But the Pnei Yeshua says some of the other things also. So a lot of times they get lost. The idea, Reb Chaim's ideas that we attribute to Reb Chaim, state already in the Pnei Yeshua. I remember once at a wedding, Reb Soloveitchik and Reb David Lifshitz were both there, and they were waiting for some additional Rabbanim to come, and they were waiting and waiting, taking a long time. So they started talking learning. So we were the Talmidim. We're sitting there. I was single. I think I may have been single at the time. So Rav Soloveitchik starts telling Rav David Lifshitz a comment from Rav Chaim Soloveitchik on the Gemara and Kiddushin. Kiddushin Ne'er Tov Simbo. So Rabbi Lifshitz is listening. When Rav Soloveitchik finishes the whole pshat, so Rav Lifshitz says, yeah, it says in Yiddish. That's what it says in the Pnei Yeshua. So Rav Soloveitchik couldn't visualize. How can it be that Pnei Yeshua says what Rav Chaim says? So different. Say, nay, if I state this. So he says he's going to tell it to him again. So he says it again. Rabbi Lifshitz is there calmly, sits there calmly. Then he says at the end, after Rav Soloveitchik said the second time, he said, yeah, it's a statement of Pnei Yeshua. Then he says, nay, again, nay, if I state. He says it a third time. And Rabbi Lifshitz sits calmly after it's all over. He says, yeah, it says in the Pnei Yeshua. So Rabbi Soloveitchik, like he gives up. He says, I can't explain it to him. He doesn't understand. What do you mean? The Pnei Yeshua says the whole pshat, except that the Pnei Yeshua says so many other things. So we usually, all the kind of Divrei Torah that we go for in our generation, we like that style of thinking. So that a lot of times gets lost in the Pnei Yeshiva because he says some of the other things. But a lot of the big insiders do say in the Pnei Yeshiva. There's some professor of law put out a book, some professor in Eretz Yisrael. He must have learned in yeshivas because the whole book is full of learning. So he put out a whole book about the Derech HaLimud of Rav Shimon Shkop. He likes Rav Shimon Shkop better than Rav Chaim. Why? Because Rav Chaim a lot of times says, Akzeres HaKosu, the Pasuk. But Rav Shimon, everything is a svar. He can explain everything with us. Rav Chaim a lot of times, he's not explaining why the din is so. He just defines, he just gives you an accurate description of what the din is. What is the din? He just gives you a description. He doesn't explain why. Our job is to define what the dinim are. They say over, I think Rav Soloveitchik maybe said this, or others say over, that the Pana de Jerov was learning in Radin, and he heard that Rav Chaim was so great, so he wanted to, he told the Chafetz Chaim that he's considering going to Rav Chaim to Brisk. Rav Chaim is not in Volozhin, and he was in Brisk. So he wanted to go to Brisk to pick up something and learning from Rav Chaim. So the Chafetz Chaim told him, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik is very busy with Tzorchei Tzibur. He's not going to have a chance to talk to him on learning. Wait till he goes on vacation. And it is not Metapel and Tzorchei Tzibur is on vacation. He'll have time to talk to him. So he waited, and he heard where Rav Chaim was going. So he went there. So punkt that day that he went, Rav Chaim was going to be relaxing to think and learning. So that day they called Rav Chaim, or they sent him a telegram, whatever. One of his daughters was having difficulty in giving birth. She was Makasha Leilet, so he wanted to be there with her, so he was going to leave. So Rav Kahneman said he came specially. So Rav Chaim said, okay, he'll talk to him for a while. So he said, so yes, Rav Kahneman, you tell me a dvater. So he told him one dvater, then he said, tell me another dvater, tells him another one, the third one, then the fourth or the fifth, whatever. So Rav Kahneman says, the Gemara says whatever. And then so he said, how did the Gemara know that this is so? So he was going to explain what the svar is. So Rav Chaim says, the Gemara givus, well, the Gemara givus. The Gemara, Chachma Gemara knew what the dinim are. You can't ask, how did the Gemara know that it's so? Chachma Gemara knew. Should say, was etmans in the Gemara. The fact that the Gemara goes in this direction and that Gemara takes up a strange position that indicates something about the nature of the din. But you shouldn't say, how did the Gemara know that it's so? So Rav Kahneman later would say he felt he was a Talmud of Rav Chaim because of that one thing that he learned from Rav Chaim directly. Everything else he heard from the Talmidim, Shem Rav Chaim. And this thing he heard directly, that you're not supposed to ask, Kavana de Gemara Givus, de Gemara Givus, speak about the Gemara Givus. He just asked, what do you see from the Gemara? That's important. I remember Rav Soloveitchik once made a comment. He said, my grandfather Rav Chaim never cleared Chakiris. He would learn the Gemara, and Rashi said like this, and Tosfos said like that. So what's the Nekudas HaMachlokes? Apparently, Rashi understood whatever, it's a din of Chepze, and Tosfos said it's a din of Gavra. But he didn't declare in advance, is the din a din of Chepze? The din of Gemara had the din of Mashiach, but Rashi goes in this direction, Tosfos got that so from the Rashi, you see, he understood it's a din of Chepze, and Tosfos understood it's a din of Gavra. But Rav Chaim presented it when he wrote it, Dvar Torah. Oh, when he said it over in a shiur, in a public shiur, so as a style of presentation, he would say, Yesh lachkar, is it A or B? And thus, bashteita machleik is Rashi and Tosfos. But now we live in a generation that there's so much imitation brisk, all of this pseudo brisk. People take a bunch of technical terms, gavra, chetze, kiyah, malos, and they force every gemara into a straitjacket, and they force all of these terms on every Gemara. Every Gemara has to work with the same terminology. Is it Gavachet to Malos Kima? A whole bunch of words. Little children already in high school, young children in high school, everybody knows Chepza Gavra Malos. Rav Soloveitchik didn't always use those words. And every sugya he would formulate from the Gemara, he would take out from that particular sugya what the terminology should be. You don't always force Gavra and Chepza on the Gemara. You don't force any Lushanis. It's the expressions, the technical concepts, the terms, the representing certain concepts should flow from each sugya differently. Now, some of the students of Rav Soloveitchik want to make him more yeshivish. So they write over his Torah with all of these terminology. But that's not the way he said the Shia. He didn't say it like that. These are some of the things about Rav Chaim. This is not all. There's a lot more. But this is a Haskolos Hadvar. What the style of Rav Chaim was. A lot different from A lot says in Rabbi Kaveh, Rabbi Chaim would say, Rabbi Kaveh became on the Ishgetracht HaKlum Nisvar. There were only three tshuvas in Rabbi Kaveh that Rabbi Chaim thought were difficult. But he thought Rabbi Kaveh was Gevaldik. But Rabbi Chaim still had, and Pesha was also Gevaldik. But Rabbi Chaim had a more precise way of defining all the Gemaras. It's a haskalah of an explanation.
Well, thank you very much, Agresi Ashikayas. That was beautiful.
Very good.
Thank you very much, Koltov.
Everyone should be well.
Amen. Bye-bye. Thank you, Koltov. Bye-bye. Joining us from Eretz Yisrael is Rav Moshe Lichtenstein. He's Rav Shiva of Har Etzion. He's a grandson of Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. Welcome, Rabbi Lichtenstein.
Welcome, and thank you very much for inviting me to join.
So, Rabbi Lichtenstein, if you had to explain, what did Rav Chaim bring to the world? What was different that he brought that we didn't have with Rav Kiveiga and the Ktzais and the Nesivis, etc.? How would you describe it?
Two or three main points that Rav Chaim innovated. But first of all, it's important to understand, Rav Chaim didn't start from a blank slate. He didn't do anything which, it's like not ever done this before. Good deal of Rav Chaim did have been done, but never systematically. And I'll say like this, a good deal of Lamdus, certainly in the past few hundred years, focused upon the Shakla Vataria, the dialogue and the debate within the Gemara. If you look at the Marsha and so on, they focus upon the twists and turns of the Sugya. Why do we ask this question? Why do we not ask a different question? What is each point in the debate come to signify? Rav Chaim focused upon the result. You know, Rav Chaim basically came and said, I will focus less upon the debate before, what's the bottom line? You know, what are the nafka minas? That's why the nafka minas and brisk is such an important factor, because over there you get not thoughts and the debate, no shakla vataria, you get the nafka minas, the bottom line. That's why the Rambam is so crucial. The Rambam is crucial because the Rambam, that's what the Rambam did. The Rambam distilled all of the conclusions without any of the previous negotiations. If you want to focus upon conclusions and hard data and not upon arguments, so the Rambam is perfect. Because Tosfos talk about many of the points that come up in discussion. Now, I'll give one example which maybe is less familiar, but it illustrates it very nicely. We have a work of the Ramban, Rav Moshe ben Nachman, the Milchamos Hashem. The Milchamos basically comes to defend the Reef and his psak against people who are disagreed, essentially the Baal HaMor, 12th century Israelis. The Ramban has long proofs which focus upon good deal of the debate and the discussion, but the also important conclusions. The Briskers took the Ramban, basically took 5% of what the Ramban wrote, focused upon that, because they focus constantly upon conclusions, and they basically, more or less, did not really address his arguments, but the conclusions were crucial. Now, the second part of Chaim did, he conceptualized. He took these conclusions and conceptualized them. In other words, what you see is simply a directive, a psak. How should I act? What should I do? Rav Chaim tried to explain the logic behind it. In other words, he comes and tells you that, he'll tell you that the meaning of this particular act should be conceptualized, and he basically introduced conceptual thinking into the system. Now, as I said before, it was done before. It's not like no one had ever thought conceptually. I'll give an example. The Gemara asks, was an Eruv Mishum Dira or Mishum Kinyan? Is an Eruv focused upon your residency or your ownership? It's in the Gemara. It's a classic Brisker Chakira. But why is nevertheless Brisk a new stage of development? Because Rav Chaim did this in every Suga consistently. He did not come and, you know, I can show you many Chakiras in the Ramban, in the Gemara, in many others, but it's done intuitively. In other words, they come to Sugya, they can raise two conceptual possibilities, they can discuss the debate, they can discuss some of the practical aspects. Rav Chaim simply said every Sugya, some things are more important, some things are less important, and he basically focused, he made it systematic. Every sugya, you look at it through the same prism, use the same questions. That's exactly what the Chazon Ish is so opposed to. According to the Chazon Ish's opposition to Reb Chaim, the Chazon Ish was A, intuitive, B, the Chazon Ish looked at everything, not only the concepts. He was interested in the details and the practical issues, and the Briskers basically focused upon what they saw as the main issue, and they neglected some of the other, they considered secondary issues. The Chazon Ish did not basically agree to talking about primary versus secondary, but he also was not conceptual, or put differently, he was intuitively conceptual at times, but not systematically. And that's what I think Reb Chaim really introduced.
Rabbi Lichtenstein, thank you very much for laying it out so clearly.
My pleasure.
Kol tov.
Joining us from New York is Reb Ezra Rutkin. He's Rosh Yeshiva of Pe'er HaTorah, the Rav of Zichron Yaakov Shloima, the Chava. He's a Talmud of Reb David for 15 years. That's not a typo, 15 years. Welcome, Reb Ezra.
Shalom Avracha to everybody, and thank you so much, Reb David, for the wonderful opportunity to be able to talk a little bit about this unbelievable, amazing Messiah.
So, Reb Ezra, when Reb Chaim came out, he brought a new derech of learning to the world. And there were, by the way, those who were opposed to it, the Maror Cheshes and his Hakdama, right? It's a pretty fiery thing against the new derech HaLimud. I think they say over a story that Reb Zalman in his Hakdama writes about the great derech HaLimud. He says, I don't know if that's really what the Rambam meant, but his Havanin Torah is amazing. And they say when the Briskerov saw it, he tore out that page. But it's other Achrayim too, just in the Hakdama, there's other places in the Sfarim, what did Reb Chaim bring him? We had Reb Kiv Eger, we had the Tzai Sachosha, we had the Nesivis. What was new about the derech of Reb Chaim?
I'll tell you, I can only give you my perspective, and I'd like to share it with you. Under normal circumstances, when you're learning something, and something is schwer, something is a little bit difficult, you realize what the difficulty is, and you attempt to answer the difficulty. That's the normal approach that I would say one would take to answering something that is not yet clear or something that is schwer. So 2 points. One thing that Reb David Zatzal, my Rabbi Reb David Soloveitchik once told me, he said it in Yiddish and I'll translate. He once told me, "Am veis was meveis nicht, heist es gewusst." If you know what you don't know, that means that you understand. That means that you know something. You realize what it is that you don't know. So that being a cornerstone, really, of an approach, I don't need to necessarily answer everything. If I know what I don't know, I know something. I understand what I do not understand. Often we find Rabbi Kiveger himself will finish by saying, Tzorech Iyun Gadol, Tosfos. Many of the Rishonim will leave something at Akasha rather than say something that might not be 100%. So that's the foundation, I guess, to understand, to know what you don't know. After that, as I said in the beginning, sometimes the philosophy would be, oh, there's a question, let me answer it. But there's another approach. And this is, I think, what Reb Chaim, again, my perspective, what Reb Chaim added or really brought that a sort of a different perspective to be able to deal with it. Rather than answer the kasha, meaning you give credence and credibility to the question and then you attempt to answer it, the other approach would be to show that the question never even really started. To look at it in a different way, people look at things with an approach, with whatever their assumptions are, to possibly look at it a different way. And if you look at it a different way, if it is, I guess the word in Yiddish is aufgehalten, if it is real, if it's true, if it's emes, if it rings true, and it shows us that everything fits into place, well, then maybe the way to approach it is not necessarily the way you thought in the beginning, but we have to look at it differently. And the way that he did that, the dynamic, I guess, would be a good word. The dynamic of the way that he did it was to look at something and possibly say, well, this can be understood two ways, the quintessential tzveit stodim of Brisk. It can either be looked at in the conventional way, the way you would look at it just at the first glance, or there might be another way to look at it. And if we look at it this second way, maybe the svara would be that this second way would not have this question anymore. And then you, of course, look for diukim or rayas from the Rishonim or from other such sources, lishitoses of other, either tanoim and amiroim or mostly in the Rishonim, to be able to be a tanya de misayale, to be a raya, to be a proof that this other way that we're looking at it is indeed the proper way. So again, rather than to answer the question, rather than doing that to make it that the question no longer began, which is, I think, what Reb Chaim really brought, that new perspective. I don't think that people learned that way beforehand. If you look through many of the Beis HaLevi, Reb Chaim's father, the Beis HaLevi, the Sfarim, the Tshuvas are unbelievable. But it wasn't with that analytical approach of looking at it to begin with in a different way. That's more of what Reb Chaim really, brought to the Derech HaLimud of what has since become, you know, quintessentially the Briske Derech, or the, if there is such a thing.
Okay, Reb Ezra, and you were a Talmud for 15 years of Reb David. Can you share, like, maybe your favorite story about Reb David?
So, there are so many. Baruch Hashem, after being there for as many years as I was, and I was I had the tremendous privilege to be, considered close. Reb David once allowed me to be called a Talmud Mufak. So, if Reb David allowed it, gives me a little bit of insight. There are many favorite stories. One that happened with me personally was one of my favorites. Everybody knows that Brisk is known for the Diktuk HaMitzvahs and the Yirah Shamayim, the zealousness to be able to make sure that you do the mitzvah in the best possible way and to be very, the Velt says, the concept of briska nerven, to be nervous about doing things the wrong way, doing things not in the proper way. But people forget about or don't really focus on the tremendous compassion, the tremendous yashrus and compassion and chinuch that they gave. And let me tell you this story, which Bidi Havuv, that happened with me. David was sitting shiva for his brother, Reb Chaim, and I was there. I was in the house for quite a while, being Menachem Oval, and people were coming and going. It was really jammed. And as it got a little bit later, the Olam thinned out. And finally, I decided, you know, there was almost nobody there. I sat down in front of Reb David. The silence was deafening, and it became a little bit uncomfortable. Reb David wasn't saying anything, and I didn't want to be Poseach.
Like the Gemara says, Igra de Avla Tumya.
Yeah, to be quiet.
So yeah, silence.
It was very uncomfortable. Silence. Finally, after a few minutes, maybe 2-3 minutes, which seemed like hours, I thought that he looked so tired and he looked so oiskimuchet from the whole day of sitting shiva and having people there. It just fell out of me. I asked him, Zee filter shiva. How are you feeling? You know, that's what I asked him. And it's as if I didn't say a word. He wasn't gairus me, didn't look up, didn't answer, nothing, zero. Okay, so the awkward silence was now compounded by a millionfold. And I'm sitting there. I didn't want to stand up. I didn't want to move. I barely even wanted to breathe. About 5-6 minutes later of deafening silence, he looks up and he goes, Reb Ezra, Kennst mit mir lernen? Can you learn with me? And I'm dumbfounded. You know, can I? Of course, I've had it. Bring a Shulchan Aruch. I bring the Shulchan Aruch. He says, "The only thing that I can learn is
Hilchas
Avelis." Yeah, the only thing that I can learn is Hilchas Avelis. I hand him the Yerideya. I hand him the Shulchan Aruch, and he listens to a certain simon, a certain seif, and he tells me, "Please, to lay in Hashtet." I start reading, and the Shulchan Aruch is in the middle of saying that the Oval is supposed to be Peseach. Somebody that's coming there to be Menachem Oval should not be the one to begin the conversation.
Shin Samach Tes, right?
I don't remember the Siman offhand. I don't have it in front of me. your memory is better than mine, I'm sure. Yeah. And the second thing it says there is that you're not supposed to be Goyish B'Shloimo. You're not supposed to ask how he's doing.
Right.
So he waited 5-6 minutes, and he Mishum Eifin wouldn't even be Goyish me beforehand. And he asked me a taiva, Kilu, I'm doing him a favor to learn with him. And he gave me such a chinuch, how you have to teach with the greatest softness, with compassion, with love. Not the chalila be, you know, well, what are you doing? You can't do that. It's against halacha. Yeah, that could have been said. But how is a Rabbi Mechanech a Talmud? With the greatest amount of compassion and love. It's a very, did he have it uvda? And really, if you talk in the world, if you ask, do you think somebody that is the son of the Briskarov would react like that? Well, somebody that didn't know him would say, no way, no chance in the world. Somebody that knew Reb David and knew the way that they talk, the way he was a Rebbe, the way he was Mechanichos, of course.
That's a beautiful story. So you learned the halacha with you and you knew the answer.
Yeah,
actually, shouldn't pay hay. You know, there's a story, by the way, with the because of that, the minig is not to even tell another person to be shalom. But yeah,
correct.
Give us one more story. Give us one more story.
One more story. Okay. So I was a bacher still in the yeshiva. It was I had been there only for about a year and a half. I came at the end of 1977. So this was maybe in late 1978. I had been there for about a year and a half, and I learned night seder in yeshiva. In Americana Shul, that's the place that the yeshiva learned second seder and night seder. And I had a chavrusa in the yeshiva night seder. And if I'm allowed to say, I was a pretty good boy. I always came. I didn't miss even night seder. One night, and everybody knew, by the way, that Reb David used to come. The most time that he would spend in the Bes Medrash would be Kaka Seder Shlishi at night. One night, I missed night seder. The next day, 9 o'clock, when first it started, Reb David sitting in the Bes Medrash at 9 o'clock, as it was his minhag that he came right away at the beginning of seder, waited for a few minutes to watch the Olam coming in. I come in, I sit down next to my chavrusa, and about 9:15, Reb David is ready to leave. He motions to me to come over. I walk over to where he was sitting, and he asks me, where were you last night, third Seder, night Seder? And I'll be honest, I was taken aback. I'm in the yeshiva already a year and a half. Yeshiva knows that I'm somebody that is fairly serious, you know, not a bad guy, maybe even a half-decent guy, and I didn't miss Sturm. So in my mind, I'm thinking, why is the Rashida asking me? Don't I have any cheskes kashrus? Don't I have any credibility, any credit here? So I decided, again, maybe I was a little bit of a chutzuf, maybe more than that. I said, Icham gedarf deget shul gein. I had to go somewhere. So David asked me, Vos de gedarf gein? Where do you have to go?
Oh, boy.
So I said, to give us soul. Vos is in give us soul. Nothing to us all. That Chevrona Yeshiva. Vos is the God to turn a Chevrona Yeshiva. What do you have to do in Chevrona Yeshiva? To give an Hespedim. Hespedim for Zemen. Hespedim for who? I say the Yidr of Mardachovich. Vos has to meet the Yidr of Mardachovich. I give an mein Sandik and Chasin Yehat mit Azivik Shemi with Mishpacha of mine. My grandmother's first cousin. He was my Sandik though. He was somebody that survived the Chevron massacre. I think in 1929, and he was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a Goyen Olam, and however the reason was, my father was mekabel him to be sandwiched by my bris, and he was nifter, and all of the Rosh Yeshivas, Reb Meir Chodosh, the Mashgiach at the time, and Reb Zuckerman were being maspid him, because he was an Alter Kevener. He survived the massacre. I felt I had to go. So I told him to Reb David, Reb David, hey, no. He gave his patented nunu. Nunu was a haskama. Okay. And I decided I'm going to take it a step further. I said, ich kenne Fred in the Rosh Yeshiva. I can ask the Rosh Yeshiva something. And he said, no, Fred, ask. I said, the Rosh Yeshiva knows that I always come. And I asked him basically, why is Yeshiva asking where I am? So many Bachrim don't even learn in the Yeshiva Night Seder, and I always did, and I'm always there. Why are you asking? So he says, come walk me home. I walk him out of the Beis Medrash, and he tells me as follows. He says, a Bachur that doesn't come Night Seder to Yeshiva, he says he's learning, he says he has Chavrusa, but I don't know. A Bachur that I know comes and that I see is growing and trying and doing and putting in kaiches, I'm very much proud of that Bachur, and I want that Bachur to continue doing what he's doing. I knew, he told me, I knew that you had a very good reason. But if I don't show you that it matters to me in a month from now, in 3 months from now, a reason that's not such a good reason might come up. It'll be just not so good. And if you think that nobody's looking and nobody cares, you might justify yourself to take off Seder for something that's less important. I didn't want that to happen. So I wanted to show you how much I care that you're growing and that you're steiging and that you're putting in your kaiches and that you're conscientious and that you come. I have to tell you, I felt like not $1 million. I felt like $1 trillion at that point. Yeshiva Reb David showed me how much he cares about everything that I do. He was, with that alone, what can I say? He was kind to me, every molecule in my body, done. I was his. This is my Rebbe.
Gevaldik. Reb Ezra, thank you very much for sharing those stories with us.
My greatest pleasure.
Kol tov, good job. Bye-bye.